From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Austin, Texas. It was the conclusion of the fall semester, and a group of graduate students gathered to celebrate by watching all of the Lord of the Rings films in one day. It was kind of a tradition. We might refer to this now as binge-watching. But of course, some of us don't prefer that term anymore. Some of us view binge-watching as a kind of unfair pejorative. And one of those students in Austin, Texas, was Lisa Perks, now an assistant Nazareth College professor. She teaches a number of courses, including just about the coolest class you can imagine. Imagine if you were in college and there was a class on media marathoning. Her work has analyzed the way our habits have changed when it comes to how we consume media, the impact on us, even our relationships with others who watch the show or don't, or maybe read the books or watch the films. Her new book is an academic work aimed at exploring the impact of binging, or marathoning, if you prefer, and she does. She pushes back a bit against some of the negative views on the way we consume media. This hour, we want to hear from you. Are you a binge watcher or a media marathoner? What are you watching that for? Does it ruin the experience for you, or does it make it better? Does it allow you to commune with others who are doing it the same way, or does it maybe happen too fast to form a meaningful community? Those subjects and more have been covered by Lisa Perks in her book, which is out now. And if you are not a student in her class, I can tell you, if you are someone who just loves to watch shows, if you're a pop psychology person, it's a fun read. And Lisa Perks, welcome to Connections. Nice to have you here.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me also say that I know a number of people in my life who may get media marathoning for Christmas because they are Lord of the Rings junkies, like you and your friends in Austin were. Mm-hmm. Lost, I think of Breaking Bad, I think of Sherlock, of course, House of Cards, as you mentioned in the book, et cetera. There's so many out there that there's not just one show anymore or one set of films. It used to be Star Wars. For me, it was Star Wars. When I was in college, I remember when the new Star Wars films were coming out, people said, we got to get together and watch all of the first three or four, five, and six in one shot. And for me, that was the first I had ever seen of it. What was the first you ever saw of what we might call binge-watching or media marathoning?
For me, in my experience, it was Hobbit Day. So the friends
Austin,
and I
Texas,
that really did get together in 2007, 2008 to watch all of the extended edition films in one day. One challenging, tiring day.
Now, Peter Jackson films are like 14 hours long, right? One of them. How long was watching all of them? And these are long days for you, weren't they?
Yeah, we got up at 8 and we would start with a special breakfast of crepes, and then we would have Hobbit second breakfast around 10 o'clock, and we would finish at 10 in the evening. So some people would take naps. We would order in food. It was a really a dedicated day.
And at the time, it was, again, the better part of a decade ago. Technology's changed since then.
Yep.
So even then, it was more cumbersome than it would be today, right?
Absolutely. Media marathoning has, I think, taken off because of the ease of access to various mediated texts. You can download a book, you can stream a film, you can stream a whole season of a show or a whole series.
I want to listen to a clip, our first clip, and we've got a number. We're going to have a little fun this hour with some of the marathoning texts, as Lisa calls them, from her work. This is a show that attracted an audience that was desperately waiting for each new episode. And so now there's a group of people who watched Breaking Bad one episode at a time, week to week.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are also a big segment of the population of Breaking Bad fans who waited and then watched it all together.
Sure.
The question is, how do you really enjoy it? Well, when you've got clips like this, for me, there's a lot to talk about. Let's listen to Walter White.
You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
That is Bryan Cranston's best work in one line for me. But Lisa, and again, there's a lot of different things to talk about with Professor Perks as we talk about her book on media marathoning, but some people think it's unhealthy that you could watch a season of Breaking Bad in a day or a weekend because you're not absorbing it in a way that allows you to digest it, to let it sink in, to talk to friends about it. You're instantly on to the next.
Yeah.
What do you think?
There is certainly a loss of that time for critical reflection. And several of my marathoners that I interviewed or surveyed, they noticed that and they commented on it as a loss for them. But I think it's counterbalanced by this greater benefit of stronger memories of the story. You don't have to try and scramble to remember oh, what did that relate to? What joke was that? What happened to this character? Some of these casts of characters, if you take, for example, Game of Thrones, you've got 30 characters and their histories to remember. So watching in this media marathoning fashion, I think can enhance the experience because of your enhanced memories.
Yeah, as you write in the book, the complexity almost demands yep. close attention, and it's easier to do in that kind of a setting. If you want to join the conversation, I want to know what you're watching in binge fashion. And I suspect it is somewhat generational, that the younger the audience, probably the more likely they are to media marathon. But that will change over time, I'm sure. So join the conversation if you'd like. We'd love to hear from you on what you're watching and what your habits are. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Tell us about the research. You had people who were happily willing subjects, and they really had to be. Tell us about that.
I collected discourse. So this was through surveys, this was through interviews, focus groups, and even student journals. These are all from media marathoners. And so the first half of my book looks at what these marathoners were doing, what motivated them, what costs and rewards did they experience from this rapid engagement with a story. And the second half of my book looks at these commonly marathon stories and what common themes and character types holds them together. And the book title, Immersions in Morality, the immersive part characterizes the experience for marathoners, and the morality captures what these stories present to us. These are lessons in morality. They invite us to consider key questions. So that's the essence.
Already the phone lines are lighting up. We're going to get to your phone calls in just a minute. But I also want to make clear that when you refer to a text can be a show, a film, a sure. book. And for me, I grew up as a when I think of the books I read, I think I'm somebody who rations. I don't want a great book that I'm reading to end.
Okay.
As much as I am excited about it, I try to read a chapter and then I'm scared to finish it because I'm liking it so much. Uh-huh. Whereas some people, I just had a conversation this morning, people tell me, when I'm reading a book I love, I will stay up till 3 a.m. and crush it, finish it, because okay. I can't stop. Mm-hmm. Isn't that essentially media marathon?
Absolutely. So that's a more traditional form. The people who would stay up into the wee hours reading their favorite book, this book that really took hold of them and their imagination. I've seen a lot of marathoners actually do both. So they'll race in the beginning, and then when they realize they're close to the end, they'll start to do that savoring. And my husband and I just did that with Orange is the New Black. We really timed out the last 2 episodes just to make sure we could be very focused. We weren't super tired. We were really attentive.
Let me get to the phones if you want to join the conversation. It's 844-295-TALK. This is Brendan of Rochester. Brendan, you're on with Lisa Perks talking about media marathoning.
We basically watched, my wife and I, we did the Orange is the New Black thing, except we didn't wait to wake up at the end. We watched it all the way through, but I've been watching a lot of older shows on Netflix. I don't watch TV, but stuff like Trailer Park Boys, if it's available, I watched that like you wouldn't believe. And then also all the new stuff, or the old stuff of Bob's Burgers. It's a little old, a little new, but binge watching doesn't happen that often for me personally. Mm-hmm. But it's available. If it's a whole season available, I'm going to do it. If it's good.
What do you think about the whole concept of binge watching? Does it enhance for you, or does it take away anything?
I'm tired of it sometimes, and I definitely find myself wanting to back off. And I have to stand up and go do something else for a little while. So I can't do like a whole weekend. Like Breaking Bad in a weekend is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That's actually an exception. I started watching that and had to break away for a little while and got back into it. So watching a whole series in a day or a weekend is a little bit too much for me. Mm-hmm.
Brendan, thanks. And there are people who you did research on who occasionally told you similar things, that everyone was a little different, but some people did wear out a little bit.
They did, and I think, I know it sounds contradictory to say that there can be moderation with media marathoning, but there can be. So you don't have to watch it in a whole day. Spread it out over a week, and it's quite manageable for some shows.
Kyle, thanks for calling. Kyle, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, we're happy to hear your experience. Go ahead.
I guess been binge-watched or media marathoned a few times recently, and definitely since Netflix has become available and mm-hmm. so widely used. I did so with The Walking Dead. I missed quite a bit of the first couple seasons just due to work and my schedule. So it was I couldn't catch up. I didn't really want to because I heard of people talking about it. So I had to stay away from social media as well to avoid spoilers and stuff. But I did that with Walking Dead, Breaking Bad as well. And I enjoy it. My wife and I, it's like a nightly thing. And sometimes it gets a little carried away. And next thing you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I got to be up. So I could see how it could be rough for some people. But, I mean, if you got the time and if you only have a small allotted amount of time in the evening or whenever, you know, it's kind of, you know, let's get it in. Let's do it.
Thanks for the call. What do you think, Lisa?
I think we're seeing some of the key patterns I identify in the book. A lot of people aren't watching what we call live TV anymore, and I'm one of them. It's Netflix almost only, or streaming through other ways. So I think, actually, Kyle has previewed my new research topic, and it's about spoilers. So when you're not watching live TV anymore, how do you insulate yourself from spoilers, or do you even care? You know, are you pro-spoiler?
How do you feel about spoilers?
It depends. I don't work too hard to insulate myself, but I know there was a big Walking Dead spoiler and I'm not caught up. So I have tried to do some subtle things, you know, not read particular articles, but I haven't done what you'll see sometimes on Facebook, threatening your friends not to announce any Walking Dead twists.
Well, right. And I think, again, that's another way that our consumption habits have changed because when it was week to week, you had to wait, and it was a little easier for me to avoid spoilers. But when you can watch an entire season, you know, the day it comes out, well, some people are going to be way ahead.
Sure.
And Lisa I don't remember if you wrote it specifically in the book or if you're referencing on your blog, but essentially the concept of when people ask the question, what time is the show on, is almost an anachronism now, isn't it?
It is. It is. My mother-in-law asked that when my husband and I told her, oh, Orange is the New Black is this great new show, and what network is it on and what time is it on? And we were just, you know, flabbergasted. Didn't cross our minds.
And won't be long now that really is gone, and probably a generation or maybe less, because what the head of Netflix says is essentially the notion of people who want DVDs even is going to be going away until they're gone completely.
Sure, the DVD is dying. We're just streaming. You can do it with a click for a minimal subscription fee. So that's taking the place of those shelves stocked with DVDs.
My favorite image in the book is this black and white of a Blockbuster store, and the only thing it's missing is a tumbleweed.
Good one. Yep.
I mean, remember when Blockbuster was the thing?
Yeah.
And now it looks like a bombed out store in the corner that's just a relic of the past, and it's not that long ago.
It's taken here in Rochester, that photo, too, and the store is still for lease.
Yeah, right. This is Kent in Lima. Go ahead, Kent.
Hi. I was just calling to say I enjoy watching the shows that way because so often I don't actually get into the show when it's on the air, so I'll get into it later, and I'll start picking up the seasons on DVD or whatnot. I think that, for me anyway, it's better because you can be continually watching. You don't have to wait till the next week. And then also, you just kind of become totally immersed in the show. You almost feel like they're, you know, friends of yours or something. So I enjoy it quite a bit.
Kent, thanks for the call, and that's a great lead into some of Lisa's research on the way these shows and this habit can build community. Mm-hmm. I took the viewpoint going into your book, and again, the book's called Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality, by Lisa Perks from Nazareth College. She's an assistant professor of communication and media. And I went into the book thinking, well, you can't build community if you do it this way, because I was a Lost watcher, for example.
Sure.
Doc Jensen on Entertainment Weekly Online used to write, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 words at a time after every episode, trying to analyze the mythology, all of the background stories. And I almost looked forward to Doc's review more than the weekly episodes. Yeah. And I remember thinking, if I was binge watching this, there's no way I would be able to do that. But you found that there is plenty of community that is built this way.
Absolutely. So a lot of people aren't watching in time with other viewers. They're not doing that live TV watching. And Lost is a unique case that I think if you didn't watch it live, you missed out on some of that puzzling that happened among the community of viewers. But for other shows that are maybe structured differently as a narrative, you can watch it and get caught up and then have these engaging conversations with your friends, with your family members who have seen it or read it, and with other viewers and readers online. So there's still a community out there waiting for you to discover it.
Yeah, these communities have sprung up in the online world that you don't have to be watching it all at the same time. That kind of used to be the community. I remember, I'll date myself a bit, I remember back in college watching, well, I didn't really watch Friends, but my girlfriend in college did. Mm-hmm. And the last episode of the season, Ross is marrying the British woman.
Oh, yep. Emily.
Emily, right. And so I'm literally standing outside playing basketball outside the building that my girlfriend lives in. And all of a sudden at once, all four floors of that building shook.
Oh.
Because apparently Ross had called her by the wrong name or something like that.
Right. He called her Rachel.
And then the season ended or something. Mm-hmm. And the entire dorm was going crazy.
Yeah.
That probably, again, that is not going to happen much anymore.
You know, not unless it's sporting events. I really think with live TV, that's where it is. It's with sports and news, but it's not with sitcoms or dramas. You're not going to get as much viewership at the same time.
Let's listen to a clip from a show that is a show. This is a show that I don't watch a whole lot with a toddler, even though Lisa's got kids and she watches everything. But that, you know, that's part of your job.
That's right. Some of them I didn't want to, honestly.
That's part of your. What was one that you definitely didn't care to watch, but you felt like you had to?
Dexter was painful. I'm sorry if that offends people, but it made me feel bad. I would watch an episode and I would go to bed and I would just feel bad. So. That's it. It would infiltrate my dreams, which is not a good experience with a serial killer show.
Okay. Well, for me, everyone tells me I have to watch House of Cards. Let's listen to a little clip, a little amalgam of Kevin Spacey, who is at the heart of House of Cards.
Any pugilist worth his salt knows when someone's on the ropes, that's when you throw a combination to the gut and a left hook to the jaw. In Gaffney, we had our own brand of diplomacy. Shake with your right hand, but hold a rock in your left.
It makes me want to watch the show. Mm-hmm. But that show, tell us about House of Cards and the impact that the way House of Cards is viewed has had.
You know, I didn't actually watch House of Cards. It wasn't on my list of commonly marathon texts.
But some of your marathoners?
Yes, yep.
Obviously gravitate towards that.
Sure, I just didn't catch it. So I interviewed people mostly from 2010 to 2012, but I would definitely say House of Cards has fueled this binge-watching media marathoning trend. It's all at once release. It makes a big difference. So all of the episodes are right there for you to explore, for you to learn something new. You know, it's just the Netflix even starts it for you. So you don't even have to click on the next episode. And it's a very intriguing political show.
Was I behind the time when Netflix was debuting House of Cards? Mm-hmm. And maybe I was behind, but I heard people talking about you're going to release every episode in one day. No one, that's crazy. Yeah. That's not how it works. At least that was what my circle was talking about.
Sure.
And of course, that quickly evaporated. Mm-hmm. But again, talk about helping change the paradigm, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. People want what they want when they want, and they want to catch the whole entire season, if possible, as soon as they need it. So I think Netflix is ahead of the curve. They're embracing this new reader-story relationship that people are craving. And they're giving that to us with Orange is the New Black and with the Arrested Development Season 4. So they've seen a lot of success from it, and I think that's going to just continue in the future.
I see the phone ringing again. If you want to call the program and join the conversation about our habits, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Lisa Perks is in studio with me. She's an assistant professor of communications and media at Nazareth. She's the college professor you wish you had teaching that kind of a class. And her new book is called Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality, that takes a research-based and academic view about the way our habits have changed. And we talk about change. Mm-hmm. 2010, there was almost no references to binge-watching.
Sure.
By 2011...
there were just hundreds in the popular press. So Google Analytics tell us a lot about what people are talking about. And it's certainly a key word in our vocabulary now. It almost It missed out on the word of the year in 2013. I think selfie beat it. So binge watching is certainly part of our vocabulary now.
But you don't like binge watching.
I don't. I don't like the negative connotations. So binging is mindless, it's thoughtless, it's gluttonous. And I prefer media marathoning because you've got this commitment and stamina. That's what I think of. You're in it for the long haul. It's not that you have to train for this type of marathoning with media marathoning, but it's something that has definite value to it, and there is a reward at the end, I would say.
Your book also pushes back against some of the recent commentary we've heard, and, you know, whether it's Huffington Post doing a piece on what does your brain look like on binge watching and things like that. I think the book is sort of a sober and level-headed look that mm-hmm. says not everyone who binge watches is some sort of a degenerate.
Right, right.
You know, some of us actually, some of us, it's easier. It for some people's schedules, it actually works out better to do it.
Yep.
You refer to it as kind of a floating holiday.
Sure. Yep. So it's on your own time. You can do the media marathoning when you want. And I think that's a very empowering thing.
Before I get back to the phones, who is the oldest media marathoner that you've talked to, worked with, researched on?
Oh, gosh. I had several in their 60s. And my in-laws live in a retirement community, and there are lots of binge watchers and readers there. And one of the inspirations for their marathons is that they will get a surgery, for example, or have an illness, and they will go through the healing process by media marathoning. It's a nice way to pass the time enjoyably.
So even though we look at this as a generational thing, and maybe fairly, certainly it is certainly not monopolized by one generation or one age group.
No, it's really not. I would say it's widespread generationally.
Back to the phones, and let me grab Lou Law in Rochester. Go ahead.
How you doing, man?
Good.
I had a couple of comments. One, was a question actually. Is what is kind of the thought, or has it been researched as far as the fans of shows being able to kind of stand the length of time between seasons now? Because we used to just, like, get held on for a little bit of time, but now as a House of Cards fan or, you know, anything else that new that comes out, the Netflix exclusive, there's these huge expanses between when a season is done. I was wondering if there's any, like, viewership's being lost because of that at all.
That's a great question, and I think actually viewerships are being gained because those breaks in traditional TV schedules enable people to find a new show, which is actually an old show, right? A show that's new to them, but it's available on Netflix, for example, and they can get caught up in time for a season premiere. So I'm seeing people, of course, get frustrated when their favorite show is done for the season and they have to wait, but then they bounce into a new show that is engaging or interesting. So we've got this whole catalog of TV shows on Netflix, and people will dip into that.
So do you think that that's how they're going to start connecting these shows, rather than have a season of one show, they'll at least kind of give us one into the next so they don't all, you know, because if Orange is the New Black and House of Cards came out kind of at the same time, you'd have, again, this huge drop-off. Are they going to start, like, releasing these a little more strategically?
That's a great question, and I think they still want to keep the fans waiting, from my understanding. You had Twitter records set with the premiere of The Walking Dead this October, and in part they have a season break and new people can catch up, and the old fans are just waiting, you know, with anticipation for that new season. So I don't think they're going to close the gap in terms of making you wait season to season, but I think they're encouraging you to jump to another show to pick up something new.
Cool. Lastly, for me, I just want to say, as a part of the marathon thing, but also just the Netflix culture, mm-hmm. is my sister's only 27, and she recently has gone through some serious health stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she notices watching regular television is really frustrating. I mean, as an example, there are everything from, you know, breast cancer awareness commercials to just objectification in every kind of way that comes at you in standard or whatever is live TV. Mm-hmm. And she really found refuge in marathon watching because she could control it. She didn't have to. It was really there for her to just find some humor or find some way to, you mentioned, or even a couple of callers, like jumping into a show mm-hmm. and really getting it around you. And she was able to do that, and it's been huge. It's been a huge help. So
I think that's a great example of,
yeah,
of viewer empowerment.
Call.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great example, and she's tailoring this viewing experience to meet her needs. If particular commercials are really getting you down, or you find them offensive, you don't have to see them when you're watching through streaming. So it's a great experience.
Joe and Hilton, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I actually, the last comment is perfect, because that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. The big reason why I use Netflix, actually I use it pretty much exclusively now, is because there is no commercials at all. That's always something that bothered me, is that you have to pay for cable, and then while you're watching your show, you also have to stop it and watch advertisements, even though you're already paying for the content anyway. Mm-hmm. With Netflix, I'm paying for the content, and because I'm paying for it, they don't have to subsidize it with commercials. It just, to me, that's a huge benefit, especially with shows like House of Cards. It seems like they're being directed without even having to think about commercials, whereas traditional sitcoms, you can, especially when you're marathoning them, you can almost tell when there's supposed to be a commercial. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's super obvious where there'll actually be a pause on a black screen until it goes to a completely separate scene where a commercial otherwise would have been. So for me, watching Netflix, it really helps the flow of the show. And when it comes to Netflix exclusives, it seems like with the new direction things are heading, it even enhances it further, because they don't even have to worry about, you know, making a dramatic break right before a commercial comes up.
What do you think?
I think it's certainly a great point that you raised, that Netflix and their original programming are changing the structure of narratives. You're right. You don't have these traditional climaxes before a commercial, and then you pick up by basically reiterating the last scene before the commercial, and it's a smoother, more seamless flow of the story.
Another great point with mm-hmm. Lisa Perks, the author of Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality, a book that long time in the works. The phones have not stopped ringing since you came in, because people want to talk about this. And in many ways, I think people will take some comfort, as Lisa's work has indicated some of the positives. But we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want her to respond to some of what people claim are the negatives about media marathoning. We're going to listen to a few more clips, have a little fun with that. And we're going to ask her about the best format shows for media marathoning, why morality is in the subtitle of the book. We'll revisit that, and why she even thinks that this helps us almost participate in the story. So short break, and more of your comments next, right here on Member-Supported Public Radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My guest is the author of a new book called Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality. And Lisa Perks is an assistant professor of communications and media at Nazareth College. The book is a very interesting look at the way our habits have changed in even a short amount of time, and especially with great velocity in the last few years. A big group of questions have come in on Twitter. We're going to get to those in a second, but let's hit some of what people claim are the negatives about media marathoning. You might call them binge watching. Lisa says she didn't like that term. She thinks it's a pejorative. But here, John Black is a professor at the Teachers College at Columbia University, who studies how technology affects learning and memory. And he compared binge watching to getting hooked on drugs. Quote, you take a dosage of a drug and have a certain amount of reaction to it. But if you keep doing it, it takes more and more of the same drug to get the same reaction. If you're watching too much at a time, you kind of get dull to it, and you're not really appreciating the show. What do you think?
I think that there's some resonance with my marathoners' experiences. Some of them did use the addiction metaphor to describe their experience. One memorable person in particular actually had to remove the Twilight books from her house because she felt like they were almost toxic after she had raced through them so fast. But it's all about moderation. I think marathoning, media marathoning, as with any behavior, you can go overboard, and most people are able to rein themselves back in.
Speaking of that, Brad on Twitter says, I do media marathon sometimes, but then I feel let down when I hit the end so quickly. I found 2 episodes a week is a pleasant compromise.
Okay, so the letdown is another thing that people have experienced, people I've interviewed have experienced, and I call it mourning the end of a series. So you've got these friends in this world that you've been part of for a really engaging period of time, and there is some loss at the end. But, you know, 2 episodes a week, I think that's fine for some people. If you're doing an episode a night, that's really not a lot of total TV time, and it's still engaging and immersive. So that balance is important.
How do you qualify? Let our audience know how you decide to qualify what media marathoning is versus just sort of serial watching or week to week or month to month.
Yeah, in order to recruit participants for my study, I had to really define what am I looking at here. So marathoning for me is watching a whole season of a TV show in a week or less, watching 3 or more films from the same series in a week or less, or it's reading 3 or more books from the same series in a month or less. So it really, if you parse it out over time, you could watch the Harry Potter films, you know, 3 in a week, and it's not a big dent in your free time.
The only real letdown I can tell you at the end of a season, I would be let down for the first 5 seasons of Lost when the season was over because I was sad that I wasn't going to get a new episode next week. I was let down with the 6th season because it was the most, well, let's face it, the reason I took this job was to get a public microphone to talk as much as I could about how disappointing the end of Lost is. It is an objective viewpoint. It's a fact, right? I mean, this isn't subjective anymore. Is that right?
A lot of people were angry about Lost. Some were fulfilled. It's true. It's true. You always have a division. And I do think that part of the disappointment at the season ending or series ending in this case, it's because people missed their story. People had a really bad reaction to the ending of Dexter. Same thing for the Divergent book series. And so I think a lot of it's just you're kind of sad. You lost that time. So there's my take.
She's defending it too much. Tom writes to us on Twitter, a great show. Ask Lisa if some series need fermentation time. Are bingers drinking Thunderbird?
Fermentation time for some series. You know, off the top of my head, I can't think of one where I really felt like the experience was diminished. I've binged on Sherlock and Downton Abbey and a lot of really, you know, quality shows. And I think the memory of what had happened previously, it still enhances the experience for me.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue to Sherlock. Let's play a clip. Actually, we'll go back towards the beginning of Sherlock, because if you are going to media marathon on a show, so often you start right at the start. Mm-hmm. Watson and Sherlock met. Let's listen.
I don't know a thing about each other. I don't know where we're meeting. I don't even know your name.
I know you're an army doctor and you've been invalided home from Afghanistan. I know you've got a brother who's worried about you, but you won't go to him for help because you didn't approve of him, possibly because he's an alcoholic, more likely because he recently walked out on his wife. And I know that your therapist thinks you're limp psychosomatic quite correctly, I'm afraid.
There's Holmes and Watson meeting in the BBC's Sherlock. And you write of your own experience watching with your husband, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, correct.
And for those of us, like as I mentioned earlier this hour, I have a hard time with the notion of media marathoning or binge watching because sometimes I need to digest and take time after an episode. Mm-hmm. Lisa writes in her book, Media Marathoning, that it can be a more participatory experience. Sure. And for you and your husband, you got to the end of was it season 2 or 3 where Sherlock ostensibly dies?
Season 2.
And the question is, how does he survive the fall? Mm-hmm. And everything was so fresh for you that you had a chance to sort of start framing in your mind possible narratives. Tell me about how media marathoning can actually lead to more of a participatory experience.
I think that the media marathoning process keeps the story more at the forefront of your mind. In that example, when we were watching Sherlock, we weren't watching other shows. We were only watching Sherlock. You know, instead of that traditional, okay, I'm going to watch Jeopardy, and then I'm going to go to a comedy, and then I'm going to watch an NCIS, or, you know, whatever your usual ritual used to be, it was just one show for us. And it really, I don't want to say it takes over your mind, because that's, you know, we're not automatons, but it was still very interesting, and we were processing it throughout our just regular days and our conversations together.
And you were able to start putting together possible scenarios for,
sure,
for Sherlock's survival?
Oh, yeah. It promotes a lot of speculation. How did he execute this? What really happened? And we were coming up with plausible solutions. And so that's an example, one of many, in which marathoning can be very cognitively engaging. You're talking about key plot twists, you're speculating, you're analyzing the clues in shows such as Lost or even Game of Thrones, you know, what's going to happen. And it's cognitively engaging. It's valuable that way.
On Twitter, Steven says, been binging since the 90s. VHS tapes of six hours of Simpsons episodes, layers of comedy that took me many times to get.
Yeah.
My colleague Juan says, what am I binge watching? Arrested Development for the third time, and I still keep finding jokes that I missed previously.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a clip from another very popular show, one that I know Lisa's students know well. Let's listen to a little combination of some of the wisdom of Michael Scott.
When I said before that I was king of forwards, you got to understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Am I going to tell them? No, I'm not going to tell them. I don't see the point of that. As a doctor, you would not tell a patient if they had cancer.
It's Michael Scott from The Office. Steve Carell, a popular media marathon text, yes?
You know, it didn't make my list, but I was one of the texts that a few people had marathoned, and I know there are many more out there.
Yeah, this is one that when I brought it up with friends preparation for the show, they said, well, you have to have The Office. So people mentioned The Office.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned Arrested Development, which I know you're very familiar with. They mentioned, you've got somebody mentioning The Simpsons on Twitter. And so my question to you is about the shows that lend themselves better to it and the possible emotional effects when someone is done, and whether comedy is different than a season of drama, for example.
You know, I think that dramas are more bingeable, more marathonable. The comedies are wonderful experiences, but they don't, I think, offer as many questions as the dramas do. And a lot of people are just really digging through the text quickly to find answers to those questions posed. So for a drama, you've got a mystery that's unfolding. You have a lot of questions about what's going to happen. With The Office, I had some questions. You know, they had the delay coupling of Pam and Jim. And if I had been able to marathon that, I would have. I would have skipped through until I had some validation of what was going to happen. But I do think dramas are more marathonable than comedies.
Mona, is the entire building Juan, I'm looking at Juan behind the glass. Mona down the hall from Classical 91.5 is joining the conversation. She says the saddest moment for binge reading sci-fi, when you get to book four of six or something like that and realize the next ones aren't written yet. But, you know, when you talk to, when you were doing your research when it came to the reading, do people approach reading any differently than they do watching a show or watching films?
You know, I think they might be even more likely to binge because instead of, you know, you're not going to sit there and fast forward through a film or a TV show necessarily, but you're gonna skim a little bit for the book content. If something is really intriguing, I think books are in some ways more bingeable. And that's, yeah, a trend I observed.
Margaret Roberts writes to us on Twitter, 19 episodes of Wallander. Wallander? With subtitles.
I don't know that one.
When it was done, I thought I could, oh, this is why we don't. She says, when I was done, I thought I could almost understand Swedish.
Okay.
What an interesting side benefit that would be. You binge on a Swedish show, and by the end of one season, you're half speaking Swedish. Jin writes to us, streaming shows won't work for those of us on limited broadband. Many in your Finger Lakes audience fall into this category.
Ooh. That's a good question. And, you know, a lot of people before streaming really took off, they would get the DVDs on the cheap from Amazon or other used DVD sellers. So there are different ways to do it.
And then we have the question of health. And, and you know, when we talk about media marathoning, Lisa has said it's not exactly like real life marathoning, but in some ways there were some parallels that crept
sure.
into your book. And you are married to a marathoner, as I understand it.
Yep.
And so Lillian Chung is a lecturer at the Harvard School of Public Health. And she wrote to NBC News, quote, there's convincing evidence in adults that the more television people watch, the more likely they are to gain weight or become overweight or obese. And there's emerging evidence that too much TV watching also increases the risk of weight-related chronic disease, such as type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Anything you've observed that leads you to have concerns about that?
You know, I don't want to dismiss that claim outright. It's certainly plausible for people who are too dedicated to their TV or film. Some people in my study did eat poorly. They were just kind of grabbing chips or grab and take out because they didn't want to interrupt their marathoning flow. But overall, that emphasis on moderation is there. If you think about the average person watches over 4 hours a day of television, if you say, I'll cut that in half, but I'll watch the you know, the same show for 2 hours. That's media marathoning. It's very purposeful, but it's not sitting on your bum for 4 hours. It's just 2 hours of the same show. So it doesn't have to be this kind of gluttonous behavior.
My guest is Lisa Perks, the author of Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality. She's an assistant professor of communications and media at Nazareth College. Her new book is out now, an academic text that really is a fun read if you find yourself kind of participating in media marathon. I keep saying binge watching, and then Lisa keeps giving me these looks across the table. But
unintentional.
Unintentional. But if you're a binge watcher or a binge reader, I keep saying watching, and absolutely reading is part of it.
Absolutely.
And so if you find yourself in that category and want to learn a little bit more about the phenomenon, the book is, again, it's academic, but it's a fun read. And Lisa, people may wonder, you know, you teach about this, and you've been a participant yourself, going back to your Austin days. Mm-hmm. But why write the book? What was the main purpose behind it?
You know, I thought this was such an exciting trend that no one's exploring. It's gotten a lot of popular press coverage, so newspaper or magazine articles. But other than one book chapter, I haven't found any scholarly study of binge watching. And so Netflix is actually putting out a lot of studies, but they have a financial motive to explore binge watching. I wanted to see what the people, the general public, are really doing.
Yeah, here's Netflix writing that they did a survey published a year ago that found 61% of about 1,500 online respondents say that they binge watch TV regularly, which they defined as watching between 2 and 6 episodes of the same TV show in one sitting. Mm-hmm. Netflix has also found that 3 out of 4 members who streamed the first season of Breaking Bad, for example, finished all 7 episodes in one session.
Okay.
But you're saying, look, they're allowed to do their own surveys, but they're Netflix. They may have a financial motive. Yep. What's been the reaction? I assume with the book is very fresh, it's very new, mm-hmm. but I assume that this could be the kind of a foundational text in the genre.
I hope so. And honestly, one of the reasons I was racing to write it, you know, it wasn't a great time for me. I have 2 young kids, so writing a book wasn't always, oh, this is a great time, let's start this now. But no one's written it yet, and I really wanted to be the first. I thought about this subject a lot and gathered a lot of research, and I wanted to put it out there before anyone else has.
What are the other shows right now that are at the top of your own list?
Ooh, my own list. You know, House of Cards is on my mental queue, I'll call it. Yeah. I'm really interested in looking at that. Right now, I'm actually on Parks and Rec. I never watched it. Well, I watched it sporadically, but not with commitment. And I'm having so much fun. I'm on season 4 right now, and it's a really nice ride.
But again, it's a comedy. It's okay,
it is a comedy.
I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, it's quick. It's 22 minutes per episode. So if you think about Netflix's definition of 2 to 6 episodes a night constitutes binge watching, that could be just, you know, 45 minutes. So that really isn't this terrible experience where I'm missing out on life because of watching TV.
Martin wants to know if commercials are dead.
Ooh. You know, I think we're going to see more product placement and product integration. So we're going to see a shift away from traditional commercials, and we already have. But, you know, you can even pay for Hulu Plus and still get commercials, which is one of the reasons I dropped it. So you're still seeing the traditional commercial form, but there's a public backlash, I would say.
It's not necessarily your job, but if you're advising companies, whether it's Netflix or big media companies who mm-hmm. produce shows, well, let's start with this. With the main studios that do weekly shows, are they working behind the scenes to make sure they're ready for when that is over? I mean, appointment weekly viewing that you and I have already discussed is largely over or is ending for a lot of people?
Yeah, you know, I think it was NBC announced that they're going to have a streaming-only option. So HBO did this as well, and I think there's this domino effect that we're going to try and, as a cable channel, unbundle from the traditional packages, which, of course, the cable providers hate. But if you can stream HBO for a nominal fee per month and get the shows that you want, I think it's a really exciting response that they have to viewer need and viewer interest. They're listening to us.
Jake writes to the program, when Star Trek The Next Generation came to Netflix, I binge-watched the entire thing 4 or more episodes a day. It was an odd sensation because I watched the show when it was new every week. Not sure if that's good or bad, but it does drastically change the feel.
Yeah, interesting. And the re-marathoning is something that people are doing.
You wrote a lot about re-marathoning. Some people doing it to refresh their memories.
Yes, before a new release.
And is that... But again, the questions we've had coming in also... for the people who are sort of negative about it, mm-hmm. want to know if overall this is an unhealthy trend, that we should try to pull back from this. I don't know that we can because mm-hmm. of the way the media is structured. I don't know if that's the future. But people re-marathoned, that's not necessarily, again, you don't necessarily view it a bad thing.
No.
If you've seen all the Star Wars episodes, but a new Star Wars movie comes out, mm-hmm. a lot of people will re-marathon the Star Wars series.
Yes.
And they get a lot out of that.
They do, and they have a fuller understanding of the story. Where did these characters come from? What's their backstory? How did they evolve? And I think it gives you a better appreciation for the new story installment that's coming out.
Yeah, you're right. That really does enhance your ability to kind of hang with the story, mm-hmm. the new one that you're about to be seeing.
Sure.
Do you re-marathon?
You know, honestly, I know this is the excuse. If I had more time, yeah. I would like to re-marathon the first two installments of The Hobbit. You know, so I can have a fresher look at the newest film that's out. But it's not going to happen, and I'm going to just do the best I can with my time.
There's a new one out last week, this week? Is that not right?
Sorry, I don't know. It's. I always think after Christmas break, I get
something.
A babysitter and we go see the new Hobbit movie. It's a winter tradition, but we're always late to the scene.
We have a few more minutes with Lisa Perks, who's helping us understand our own habits and the psychology, the way we've changed, and it really a lot has changed in just the last few years. Part of the subtitle is morality.
Yeah.
And when I'm reading along, I was surprised at first to even... I often think of shows as... And again, Lisa doesn't like when we think of it as mindless because mm-hmm. For some people it may be, but for many people there may be value there. The morality, how does morality fit in?
Morality is the key theme that I found across all sorts of different stories, from Lord of the Rings to How I Met Your Mother to Harry Potter, Divergent even. And what these stories are doing is they've got lots of models for us to consider as characters. So we've got the hero, who generally tends to be very merciful. We've got the villain, who's got a single-minded pursuit of power. But we also have this gray area. We've got morally ambiguous characters, and we have what I call puppeteers. These wise characters that often manipulate our heroes. And they do it for purposes of good, but it's not very transparent. And so I see a lot of morality questions raised by the inclusion of those characters and the questions they encourage viewers to think about.
And again, if you're saying, well, but what does it have to do with media marathoning? Mm-hmm. You're talking about the shows that are really ripe for this, aren't
sure.
you?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. And so what did your research participants tell you about their views of the way they kind of took in the show, the way they either rooted for characters or followed the story or understood the morality?
You know, I remember one quote, and I'll be paraphrasing, but about Harry Potter. One of the participants, the marathoners, said, you know, you have this sense that Dumbledore is almost like Santa Claus, and that's the word they used to describe him or the character they compared him to. But at the end of the story, you realize he's not, you know, 100% good. He makes mistakes. He makes poor decisions. And could there have been a different and better path that he took? And so it was really interesting to me that they picked up on it. And they like characters that are evil, but with a backstory. So Magneto's one that they discussed. Boromir from Lord of the Rings is another one. And we get a sense of where these characters are coming from, even if they don't make the best choices.
On Twitter, Dan writes to us, normally don't start shows until a few seasons in, and I have to binge to catch up. I love doing it, but waiting each week is great, too. I grew up with doing that, too. I loved it, but that's sort of over, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
For a lot of our listeners say, no way, I still will do it on a weekly basis. We're not saying it's over today. We're saying... It's ending.
It's on the way out.
It's going to end.
Yes.
How soon?
I think so. Gosh, you know, for me, live TV is pretty much gone. It's not part of my regular repertoire.
It's still available if you chose it. You're not choosing it. It's not part of your life.
That's correct.
When will it not be available?
When will it not be available? I think you're always going to have broadcast TV. It's always going to be there. People like to turn it on when they're doing the dishes or doing the ironing, you know, just kind of cruising around the house. So background TV will always be there. But I think live TV is on the way out in terms of engagement. Experiences.
Before I get one more phone call in, we're doing an end of the year program called Rochester 2040, where we look ahead to what our lives will be like 25 years into the future when the clock hits 2040, Lisa. And I wasn't going to talk to you about this, but this is your chance to tell us how the media landscape will be different. Who knows what it's going to be in 2020, right,
yeah.
as opposed to 2040?
That's a great
is
question.
Is there any way to guess what 2040 will look like?
I think we're going to have fewer books on our shelves, fewer DVDs on our shelves. We're going to just be streaming the content that we're interested in or downloading it. And I would say you're going to see more of what the popular press calls cord cutting, getting rid of those expensive cable subscriptions. and just getting an internet subscription. So that's what I predict to be the future.
Streaming to devices that we might not even really fully have yet.
Right.
But having to wait is probably not, that's by 2040, will that be considered anachronistic?
Largely, I would say. Yep, you're going to get what you want when you want.
One more phone call. This is Gary in Bloomfield. Go ahead, Gary.
Yes. Actually, it's ironic that I would be the last outside phone call. But, I have sort of a question or a comment about the whole concept of this show. I got rid of my TV 32 years ago when my son was born because I didn't want him exposed to all that negativity through advertising and the media. But the idea that media itself, that watching life, having a voyeuristic view of life as opposed to just daily going out and living life, kind of sounds like kind of a shallow way of living.
Well,
and
Gary,
one other comment on that was that even in terms of values, your guest even made the point earlier, made a statement earlier, which sort of, in my opinion, proves my point when she said people are going to want they're going to get their media when they need it.
Well, hold on, Gary. Only because I'm going to lose you because of time. Lisa, short response there. Again, not everybody wants to watch a lot of television. That's fine. I don't watch a whole lot of television. But he's saying it's some sort of an indication of values. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the Media Marathoning Trend, it covers books as well, which tend to be elevated as a higher art form. And I think really it's all about moderation, as I've said earlier, but you can actually take value from these stories. It's not a lot of, I'll say, mindless garbage out there. You can really think about important questions through these commonly marathon stories.
And you can marathon the classics, by the way.
Oh, sure.
And it's been done, and that's not out of the question. Last comment for the hour comes from Meyer. KF Meyer on Twitter says, please don't let binge watching be to blame for laziness and poor health. Obesity has been in place well before this behavior.
Sure.
You agree with that, Lisa?
Absolutely. I think that's another important defense of media marathoning.
Now, we're not here to endorse spending hours upon hours of watching a show or films or reading whatever. We're here to talk about the trends. Whether you like it or not, some of you love it, some of you don't, like Gary, our world has changed.
Absolutely.
And Lisa Perks has helped us understand that. She is an assistant professor of communication and media at Nazareth College. Her new book is called Media Marathoning, Immersions in Morality. Fun conversation. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much, Evan.
And congratulations, by the way. You deserve congratulations because young mom, working, new book, very good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for all of the calls and feedback this hour. Great fun. This is a Wednesday. Thank you, Randy and Juan behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections, a member-supported public radio.